Hey guys, welcome to the Challenge Podcast. I'm Coach Steve.
And I'm Coach Nick, and we're going to be talking about everything fitness, health, and the challenge.
Let's get on with the show.
What's up guys, Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Challenge Weekly Show. I'm here with our co-host, Coach Nick. Nick, how are you doing today?
I'm very good, Coach Steve. It's nice to talk to you.
Yes, and welcome to the episode number 25 of our Challenge Weekly Show. Nick, how exciting, episode number 25. That's a quarter of a century.
I was going to say quarter of 100, so that's fantastic. Yep, we're nearly at 100.
Nearly at 100, how exciting. And look, this week in the challenge is week 8. So week 8, which the theme of the week this week is stress. So if you're currently doing the challenge with us, make sure you're heading over to the challenge website and start looking at some of the information about stress. And I think, you know, when we consider that biopsychosocial athlete, someone who's going to the gym and all the other inputs of life, like stress is a huge component, Nick. And if we are really stressed, but we're going to feel that in the gym, we're going to feel that when we're trying to change our body composition, heck, we're going to feel that when we're trying to be adherent and follow a diet. So stress is so important, and we need to acknowledge if we are experiencing stress and find ways that we can manage it.
100%. Definitely. It's really up there. Very, very important.
Now, also in week 8, we have our week 8 check-in. So if you're currently doing the challenge, make sure you check in this weekend where you'll be prompted to upload a progress photo. So just yourself, and you don't need a completion document or a newspaper, nothing like that. It'll just be a progress photo. And it'll be a great way to check in with your journey. So you can look at your starting photo, your week 4 photo, then your week 8 photo and see the changes. And if you are seeing great changes, congratulations. And if you're not, it's okay. We've still got another 4 weeks, so 4 weeks of effort. And you can reach out to us on places like the forum. We can help guide you so that you can get closer to where your goals are for these 12 weeks.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So make the most of that check-in because it's there for a reason.
Absolutely. Now, look, Nick, let's talk deadlifts. How are your deadlift training going?
Oh, I'm having the best time on my deadlifts at the moment. I'm loving my deadlifts.
What was your, what's your training weight this week?
Okay. So today I did 120 kilos for 6 reps and I did it 4 times. So that's like really 24 reps, but there was a little bit of rest in between, obviously.
That's so huge.
I'm very proud of myself because I'm still quite lean, which is fantastic. So it's that really happy mix of lightish, leanish, and strong, which is for me where I want to be. You know, that's how I want to live my life, my whole life. And it's taken me a long time to get to this point because I've certainly been, you know, bigger and stronger, but I like to just be the ultimate version of myself. So I'm pretty happy. How are yours going?
Yeah, really well. The weights are starting to move nicely, and I'm kind of getting close to that like PB territory, which is always exciting. But I think my problem, and I do this every time I'm kind of going through my mesos, is that I kind of increase my weight too quickly. So I ramp up my volume too quickly. And sometimes I really struggle with my own discipline because I know, I guess, where my strength lies and I know how strong I can be. And sometimes if I'm continuously at 100%, you can only be, you know, training at 100% for so long before everything starts to break down. So it's just a matter of being disciplined and patient and slowly building up. So now I'm kind of touching this kind of like PB territory, which is tough because you train in PB territory when you prep for powerlifting events. It's just this constant like mental buildup for the actual training session, and then you do, let's say, one good set and you're like, okay, whew, I've got maybe like one or two good sets left in this session before everything slowly starts to go down. And then, you know, you're just fighting for that end of the session to try to put in some good work. So it's definitely a mental battle at this stage, but you love it. You love the process, and it's nice to see when things are actually moving in the right direction.
And I love hearing that, and I think everybody will love hearing just that perspective from someone who is a coach as well. That's we all have our little battles within ourselves when we turn up. That's the thing. It doesn't matter how experienced you are. Nobody is immune to that, because when you're working at that really high end, it's going to be a battle. That's why it's a personal best. It's never going to be easy because your body has not done it like that before, ever. So it's going to be something that's super duper duper hard.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think sometimes it's lots of excitement versus lots of frustration. An example would be actually today in the the day that we recorded this, I was doing some squats at a gym. And I guess my training kind of goes in like cycles. So picture like a wave in the ocean, it kind of like waves. So I peak and then I come back down, and I peak and come back down, right? And this is called phase potentiation, where we're waving. And just a few weeks ago, I was squatting, I think it was like 175 for three, okay? Which is, I was pretty happy with. That's kind of around that PB territory. And then today, as I'm building myself up, I was at 170. So a little bit lower than I was at 175, but it felt so much harder than what it seemed like when I was doing my 175. So it's lots of frustration being like, how am I, you know, maybe going backwards? And that's your first kind of idea that comes to your mind. You're like, oh, geez, I'm going backwards. What's happening here? But you do need to remember that there's all these other influencing factors that can contribute to that. So let that be, I'm a little bit stressed at the moment, or I didn't hydrate enough today, or I didn't time my nutrition well, or heck, maybe I just had a busy weekend and my body was still kind of recovering from, you know, all the bits and pieces that you do around the house. So all these kind of contributing factors play that time. And heck, even in that moment, if you aren't as excited as you were in the previous moment, you know, it feels very differently. So yeah, it's lots of frustrations, lots of excitements, but that's part of the process, where you can't always be perfect every single day. It's a matter of finding the best version of you on that day.
Oh yeah, look, I've had so many frustrations with the deadlift simply because also I wasn't training for it, so I wasn't able to do it very often, and I just kept wondering, do I still have it in me, and things like that, and I had to hold myself back. So yeah, I mean, today was probably the first time in, I reckon, maybe a year. So for me, it's like I've been waiting for a year for this day. I'm very chilled about it because I also did yoga this morning. So I'm just like all over zenness, you know, 6 a.m. yoga, deadlifting, you know, a bit of mind stuff with you now, some discussions. What more could I ask for?
That sounds like a perfect day.
Yeah, perfect day.
But look, Nick, let's talk about our deadlift competition. So we were planning to have a little head-to-head battle, as you will, versus our Wilkes scores. But I think it'll be really cool if we open this up to everybody.
I agree with you. We are a community. We can't hog the deadlift competition.
No. So I'm posing something like a deadlift celebration, a challenge liftoff, as you will.
I love it.
A challenge liftoff. So what I'm proposing to anybody listening to this is to join us in the first ever challenge liftoff, where you can submit a video of yourself completing a one rep max of a deadlift. So any type of deadlift, let that be conventional, sumo, whatever it is. And you could use any bits of equipment that you need, let that be knee sleeves, a belt, wrist wraps, whatever you need, and celebrate your strength, celebrate your one rep max, celebrate the deadlift, and join us in the first ever challenge liftoff. So we haven't really thought about all the details yet, but during the weekend of the 30th of July to the 1st of August, so that's Friday, Saturday, Sunday, let's open up a competition where you can post a video onto either our Facebook group or on our Instagram and tag us, either Max Challenge or Maxine's Challenge. And we will choose a winner out of a hat. So not necessarily based on merit, because everybody's welcome to join us. So anybody who joins the competition, we're just going to pick a random winner and we'll send that winner out a really sweet prize, I reckon.
Yeah. So it's really just about, it's a celebration. So we're going to take out the element of needing to be the best or anything like that, and just celebrate yourself. And it also then will encourage you to film yourself, which we'd love to see you doing for all of your lifting in the gym, so then you can really start to perfect your technique. So it's sort of, we're getting you used to that as well. So it's a celebration weekend. I can't wait.
It's going to be good. So it doesn't matter if you're deadlifting 30 kilos or 300 kilos. We don't really care. We just want you to celebrate the one rep max of a deadlift, your strength, your peak. Celebrate liftoff and join us for the first ever challenge liftoff. That's the 30th of July to the 1st of August. So this, the end of this month, which will be really cool. And that's kind of coincides with the Olympics, if everybody's interested in the Olympics.
There you go. So look, we've got our own little
mini Olympics. Talking about the Olympics, is there a certain sport that you love to follow?
Oh, I've always been partial to swimming because I used to be a swimmer when I was younger. So I love swimming. I also like it because Australia is reasonably good at it. So that's always nice. How about yourself?
I love watching the weightlifting.
Oh, yeah.
So the most biased. I'm really excited to watch Lasher. So he competes in like the super heavyweights, like the big boys. And some of his training lifts that he's posting on Instagram looks like he's going to set new all-time forever world records for the snatch and the clean and jerk. So I'm really excited.
That's real. I mean, that is art, isn't it?
It is. It is. It's just the most beautiful thing to watch, watching a weightlifter, watching a guy or girl lift many times their body weight over their head in one clean movement is just amazing. Like, let's say Lasha, he's posting videos of him doing 210 kilos on a snatch. So that's from the floor, overhead, one movement. He's doing that for triples, right? And it's just like, my dude, like I did that on a deadlift just the other day, and that was like my max, and this is his working sets of 210 snatch overhead. Like, just absolutely insane. So I always get really excited about that, but I think I definitely turn into one of those people watching the Olympics where I comment on everything. I'm like, oh, look at that dive, like I should have rotated a little bit more. Oh, look at those runners, those strides are too short, I should be running a little bit faster.
Oh no.
No, not that bad, but I guess I do kind of get caught up in it. Yeah, but politics aside, you know, I'm always excited about the Olympics. I think watching the peak of human performance is always amazing. And to think about these athletes who've been training for their entire career for one moment, it's just unfathomable to think of.
Yeah, I really admire that. I think it's fantastic. And how good is it that our competition's going to coincide with that? I mean, look, we can really be inspired by that, and we can inspire others.
That's it. That's it. Maybe we'll have to have like a little opening ceremony for our challenge.
Oh my gosh, yes. I will make a flame. I'll get my kids to make a flame for sure.
No pyros. Okay. Look, Nick, let's talk about some non-scale victories for this week. So would you want to kick us off?
Sure. Okay. So I've got the first one is Catherine Steed. So to quote Catherine, she says, "I feel the control I have from Pilates and yoga have been great for my transition into weights. Working hard and seeking guidance from the coaches to acquire the skills and confidence to lift weights strongly with correct form." So I was rapt with that because that makes me really happy that she's listening to some things that we might say about weights and then transferring it to her own experience. So, how could that not make me happy? Like, it makes our job worthwhile, doesn't it?
That's awesome. Congratulations, Catherine.
Well, that's really good. And then we've got Susan. So Susan, what is it? Oh, my gosh, Susan.
Gallimeyer.
Sorry, Susan. That's terrible because, like, you're the best thing ever. Susan mentors, like, half of our challenge group, everything. But anyway, so Susan's amazing because she gets things done no matter what. She gets things done nice and early before a hectic day. She did all those steps. So that's actually really inspirational because it just shows you that really it doesn't matter how busy your day is, you can still get stuff done. And I can really resonate with that because I've always gotten up really early to get stuff done. So I love that. And that's a really big NSB. And I've got one more.
Tell me.
Oh, this one's really good. So this one goes out to everyone in lockdown who's doing the lives. So it's a really good community at the moment of everybody who's just gone, okay, I'm a little bit sort of maybe I don't have access to a lot of equipment. I might be a bit unmotivated. So everyone's just joining into my live workouts and making it into a real community feel, getting it done. We're having a good time and I really appreciate that. And I love the effort that people are putting in.
Awesome. Awesome. How many are joining you in these lives on Wednesday morning?
Oh my gosh. Well, we've got on the Facebook group, it's sort of infinite, but I reckon that there'd probably be about maybe 15, and then on the Zoom, maybe about the similar, maybe a bit more than that. So that's pretty good. I'm really happy with that. It's building and it's just got that momentum that I know it's going to go off tap. So yeah, I just love it. I love them all. And I just love the encouragement that they give each other, and we just all have a laugh even though everyone's on mute and I'm the only one that's talking. I know that people are laughing, so it's pretty cool.
So Nick, tell us if someone was wanting to join you in the lives on Wednesday morning, how could they join you?
Okay, so I always on late night on a Tuesday or, you know, Tuesday evening, I always post the link, but also under the hashtag Workout Wednesday on our Facebook group, you will find the link to our Zoom class, which is just my Zoom room. You can always reach out to me if you can't find the link. But then also, if last resort, you can jump onto the Facebook group, and it's always live at 7:30 Melbourne time in the morning on a Wednesday. So if you miss that as well, it's recorded. So then you can do it after, which a lot of people do, and then they let me know. So always let me know if you've done the workout. I love to hear.
Awesome. So good. So good. Look, I've got a few non-scale victories for this week. So the first one goes out to Michelle Truswell, who was nominated for Member of the Month for July for her gym. Ooh, how cool.
That's cool. That's really cool when you get nominated for Member of the Month. It's awesome.
So congratulations to Michelle. And I believe she posted that on her journal. So congratulations, Michelle, Member of the Month for her gym.
You're inspiring others.
Now, also in the journal, I came across Justin Ryan. So Justin Ryan highlighted that he's been facing some challenges, some difficulties within his own personal lives in completing the challenge, getting to the gym, and those bits and pieces. And he made a new post today where he says that I'm still keen to keep going and really enjoying the changes. That's a huge win. So that's awesome that even though he's facing some adversity, he's still pushing through and he's enjoying the process. So congratulations to Justin.
Fantastic, Justin. I love hearing that.
Now, the last one here goes out to Jamie Shaw. And when I read this, I can actually really resonate with Jamie because I've been there myself. So his post was that he says, I have never really been confident pushing bench press too much as I don't usually have someone to spot me, and that causes a bit of mental doubt with the lift. I was always able to talk myself out of doing reps with the weight today instead of questioning the what ifs. So it's awesome that he's able to break through those mental doubts rather than thinking of the what if, what if, what if. And I think I resonate a lot with Jamie because I've been there myself where I was actually really scared of the bench press. I used to avoid it. So I used to do lots of dumbbell chest presses. I used to go on the machines and those things in between. And the bench press used to get scared because I thought I was going to get crushed under that thing. But now I would say the bench press kind of turned into my strength and one of my favorite activities to do. And even just today, I saw a post from Jamie where he pushed a new personal best where he bench pressed 100 kilos for 3. So congratulations to Jamie on that new PB for a bench press, and congratulations for breaking through that, you know, mental barrier of being a little bit scared of the weight. And that's okay, because being a little bit scared of the weight is kind of part of it, because you need to have a little bit of fear of it so that you can conquer it. Because if you're not scared of it, you're not respecting it.
I know, you need to respect. It's so weird how you can get scared of a weight. Like I remember with my squat, I wasn't scared of 97.5, but I was scared of 100. And it took me a long time not to get scared of 100. A long time, even though it was doable, you know. So I completely resonate with that as well. And then once you stop being scared of that weight, there's always a new weight to be scared of, isn't there?
Yep. And I find that whenever you get scared of that transition, let's say that 100 kilo, the triple digit, once you break through that, it's very quick to push past that. And let's say with the bench press, I remember being stuck at like that 97.5. And every time I put that 100, I got scared.
You were like, I can't do it. Even though you could probably do like, you know, 8 reps of 97. And you're like, I've got this.
But then as soon as I conquered that 100 kilos, like I was onwards and upwards to 105, 110 was very quickly after that. So Jamie, I'm sure that you're on that path as well, mate.
Well done. I love that. Yay.
Yeah, congratulations to all of our non-scale victory participants this week. And if you are experiencing a non-scale victory, let us know. Post about it in your journal, on our Facebook group, even on the forum, and we'll find it. We'll chat about you next week in our non-scale victories. Now, Nick, let's move on to our coach's corner. So do you want to kick us off with some advice for the coach's corner this week?
Okay, so one of the questions that I was asked this week is about the best core exercises. So firstly, that question is quite broad, because best core exercises for what? Because I'm assuming, I really am, and this is just an assumption, but I really think it's probably the question more about how do I make my abs pop, you know, because best core exercises for like what, stabilizing your core, for, you know, for doing big lifts, for what? So I'd have to ask that first up without being annoying. But I just would like to know what for, because some people really probably don't care about their core. They just want to see abs. So there's that. Secondly, Yeah, in your training and my training, we probably have come to an agreement, and you'll be able to answer this for me as well. But don't you think that a lot of the bigger lifts, I mean, how do you hold yourself up? How do you actually get that lift off the ground? How do you, you know, squat if you're not using those muscles? So they are really good to actually make sure that you're using your core. Would you agree with me?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you can't not use your core with any movement.
That's right. And the thing is, often, say, the top end bikini competition people might wear belts and things like that because they think that possibly it disengages their core because of the look that they're after for their competitions, which actually then shows me how much we must use our core in all of the compound exercises. So for me, I don't do a heck of a lot, unless I'm doing the classes and things, of just things such as planks or side planks or, you know, even your sit-ups and stuff like that. I don't do a heck of a lot of them yet. Abs are one of my things that are there. So I'm assuming that I got them from many, many, many years of deadlifting and squatting and even, you know, bench pressing, overhead pressing. I mean, I'm telling you now, if you are not solid in the core there, you are not going to be able to lift a big weight over your head. So I would say keep doing all of those. Keep doing all of your compound exercises. Get stronger and stronger on them, and that is going to be the best bang for your buck for your core. The only thing I'll add is also, just for women, make sure that you're not sort of lumping your pelvic floor in with your core, because that's what we sometimes do, even in group fitness. I guess we don't mean it unless you've done a lot of training on pelvic floor, or perhaps you've given birth or you've trained in the birthing area. You don't maybe think too much about that, but it's definitely something, if you ever experience any problems with that area, if you've had children and things like that, it's definitely something to go see a professional about and get some exercises to strengthen that area, the pelvic floor, because that's something that you do need to really work on post-childbirth to make sure that you are able to deadlift as much as you want to lift without weeing. Let me just say it, without weeing. So, anyone who's ever, look, CrossFit athletes, everybody's done it. It's fine. But the thing is, yeah, you don't have to. You can actually, there are some exercises that you can do to make sure that that area is being looked after. So even though I just said people do lump it in and they shouldn't, I just thought I'd take this as an opportunity to say pelvic floor, yes, work on it.
I like it. I do think when it comes to pelvic floor training, it should only be brought up when there's a dysfunction in it. Many of us hold lots of like tension in our pelvic floor, and for many problems with pelvic floor, it's because of hypertonicity, not because of hypotonicity, meaning the pelvic floor is too tight. So it only really becomes a problem if we are experiencing like pelvic dysfunctions or after childbirth, for example. And sometimes this overemphasis on pelvic floor training can become a little bit problematic. And I guess I see that in the clinic side of things, where some people come to me being like, oh, I always train on pelvic floor. I'm like, why? No wonder you're having some challenges with your pelvis.
Yeah, definitely. See that? Yeah, that's the complete other side of it, which is really, really interesting, because there is a big movement out there to, which I've actually skipped, because I mean, I'm like nothing against it or anything, but I feel like I got away with it because I had the kids and then I just started deadlifting, and that actually made everything stronger for me. Like, that's just me. So the more I did it, the better my running was, because the less likely I was to feel like I needed to wee when I was running, stuff like that. Even trampolining I can do now, and I haven't sort of been massively into that, but I can see what you mean. Yeah.
But look, just talking about, I guess, core training, I think you're completely right, where many individuals will want to add some element of core training because they want the six pack.
I think that's why, because just say it was like a real rule, core training does not give you a six pack, and everyone knew that. I wonder how many people would still want to do it.
Yeah. And I do think that we often, well, first of all, we need to kind of define what is the core, right? Where core is the muscles, or core are the muscles that attach directly onto the spine. Okay. So something like the rectus abdominis, the six pack muscle, does not attach onto the spine. It attaches onto the hips and the ribs, right? It doesn't attach onto the spine. So core training is kind of stability training where we are actually trying to resist any sort of movement. So often we're resisting things like flexion. So things like the plank resists flexion, or resisting side bending. So that's like a side plank. We can resist rotations. So that could be something like a bird dog or maybe a dead bug, where we're trying to keep our body still in space, but we're trying to resist movement. So we're trying to stabilize the body. That's essentially what the core training is trying to do. And you need a strong core if you're going to lift heavy. So you can either sit there and do lots of Pilates, yoga-based movements, some anti-rotation, stability-based movements, or just go lift it heavy. Go lift something heavy because you need that core stability, that core strength to be able to do that movement. So if you're wondering if your core is weak, well, if you can deadlift your body weight and you can press a load overhead, you don't have a weak core. Your core is being worked completely fine. Pop quiz, Nick. Do you know what the first muscle to activate whenever you move is?
In your whole body?
Yeah, yeah. The first muscle to activate whenever you do any movement, do you know what that muscle is?
Oh, gosh.
It's one of our core muscles. So it is part of the thoracic diaphragm, so that diaphragm muscle. So that's one of the first muscles, bang, turn on, and that's closely linked with that transverse abdominis, so that deep abdominal muscle, which is connected to our pelvic diaphragm or the pelvic floor. And that creates like this nice circle of what we call intra-abdominal pressure. So whenever you do movement, whatever it is, let that be me moving my arm right now, me moving my head, me talking, that diaphragm turning on each time, right? So you can't not use your core whenever you're exercising. So you don't necessarily need to add additional core exercises unless you're overreaching in a certain area where you're finding that core balance to be a problem. Okay. Now, when it comes to abdominal training, so I'm talking that rectus abdominis, the obliques, they're muscles like any other muscle. And we do find that they get used in lots of movements, similar to what you said. When you're pressing overhead, you need that rectus abdominis to kind of co-contract while you're lifting to keep your midsection from tumbling over. So these muscles get lots of isometric movements and contractions. And we do see lots of muscular developments in those abdominal muscles just from heavy compounds. And you probably went through this the exact same way I did, was as soon as I kind of like leaned down and lost some body fat, bang, there are my abs, they start showing. And I did literally zero ab work. I hated doing crunches. I hated doing sit-ups. I hated doing whatever other like popular ab thing there was. I didn't do them. All I did was lots of deadlifts and overhead presses and bench presses and those things. And I had a very nice, well-rounded six pack.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. Like, yeah. And I love that for me. It's good because I just see it as a really, I think you can really only get that when you have put in a lot of hard work in the gym in terms of with your big lifts and stuff. So it's cool.
Now, for the vast majority of beginner to late intermediate trainees, so anybody who's been training from 0 days in the gym up to maybe 2 years of training in the gym, totally fine to do zero ab work and just focus on heavy compound lifting to see continuous abdominal gains. If you are an advanced trainee, you've been training for 3+ years, someone like you and I, to continue to see good abdominal development, yes, we'll need to treat the abs like any other muscle. So we would need to go through progressive overload of things like the rectus abdominis and the obliques so that those muscles can go through hypertrophy. Okay. So it does have its place by having some focused and controlled abdominal work. But it's funny because the majority of the time when I watch people do ab work, let that be from back in the days when I was a Pilates instructor to seeing people on Instagram, on our Facebook, anywhere in between doing ab work, the abs aren't even being trained, right? The abdominal muscles, let's say the rectus abdominis, isn't even going through a concentric phase of contraction. They might be doing a sit-up and it's coming all from their hips. So their hip flexor is doing the sit-up. Or they're doing a sit-up and they're just flexing their neck. And it's like the abs aren't even moving. And in some cases, someone will be doing a sit-up and their spine is still in extension. So they're not even contracting their abs. So ab training actually takes a bit of time to learn. And you don't need a lot of ab training, like 2, maybe 3 sets of abs. I don't know about you. If I ever did like focused ab work to train my rectus abdominis. Two or three sets, I'm cramping, I'm all over the shop, I'm fatigued, it's done, right? It doesn't take a lot, but it takes a while to learn how to do it.
Definitely. And when you do learn, it's actually cool because it isn't a big deal. Yeah, you're right. It doesn't take that long to kind of get hooked on them.
Look, I wanted to touch a little bit on warm-ups.
Yeah.
And we've spoken a little bit about warm-ups in the past, but I think I come across many warm-up protocols which are essentially too long and are inefficient, where someone would be doing, you know, an hour worth of activation drills or warm-up drills or other bits and pieces and other fancy weird things, and they basically tire themselves out before they even train. So I want to talk about the idea of an efficient warm-up, how to get yourself ready to train and then ready to go. Now, this protocol is called the RAMP protocol, R-A-M-P, RAMP. And it's a little acronym, which is nice to remember. So this is something that you can remember. So starting with R, the R stands for raise. So the first thing we want to do when we're going through a warm-up is that we're trying to raise some of our biometrics. What am I talking about? Firstly, we're trying to raise our temperature. So we're trying to get physically warmer. Now, this could be you sitting in front of a heater warming up. It could be you driving to the gym and you're in your warm car, the heat is going. It could be you maybe on a treadmill warming yourself up, but physically we're trying to warm up our body. Similarly, we're trying to raise our heart rate and raise our blood pressure slightly. So we're trying to, you know, get ourselves going and we're trying to raise blood flow around the body. Additionally, we're trying to increase some of our joint synovial fluid mobility. So we know that when a synovial joint, so a synovial joint being almost any joint in your body, is dormant or not moving, it can become stiff. And you've experienced this when you've been driving in a car for a really long time. Maybe you're listening to this and you've been driving in your car. When you hop out of your car, sometimes you feel like an old man or an old lady and you're like, oh, geez, I feel old. But then you take maybe 5 or 10 steps, your body starts moving and you're like, okay, I feel good now. So that is this idea of the synovial fluid. When the joint is immobile, it becomes a little bit more viscous. And once we start moving, it becomes a little bit less viscous. And that's part of the warm-up process. We're trying to raise that fluid. Or we're not adding more fluid to it, but we're just trying to change that fluid. So we're still raising. Now, a great way to raise yourself in our RAMP protocol is something like walking on a treadmill, walking to the gym. You know, maybe you're setting up your garage gym, you're moving your body around. That's the first step. The A in RAMP stands for activate. So this is when we go through some activation drills, which could be something similar to like a prehab drill. Now, often our activation drills are based in rotation. So for something like a lower body drill, we often are grabbing something like the resistance band or like a booty band, and we're doing our classic, you know, glute clams or some hip raises, or we're going over to the cables machine or another resistance band and we're doing some rotator cuff work or some face pulls or something similar. And what we're doing is we're taking the shoulder joints through rotation, mostly through external rotation, and then the hips, we're taking them again through rotation, mostly through external rotation. So with our activation drills, we're mostly taking our joints into this external rotation or outward rotation, and we're starting to prepare our body. Now, within that activation, we can kind of go through a process of activating our quote core, like we just spoke about. So if you are training early in the morning and you've you know, still kind of waking up and you've done a little bit of work on the treadmill, what you can do as a bit of a practice is do something like some anti-rotation work. So like a Pavlov press or a bird dog or some anti-flexion or extension work, such as a plank or something similar, where you're starting to, quote, activate some of these muscles. So you're getting a bit of connection so that you're ready to lift something heavy. Because if you're about to go and squat 200 kilos or twice your body weight or whatever it is, you may not be able to go 0 to 100. You might need those muscles just to kind of become aware again, sensitized to the area, so we're activating them. The M in our RAMP, so we've gone raise, activate. Now we move into mobilization. So mobilization would be some movement specificity. So you're about to do some squats. You may find that, you know, your ankles are really stiff or your hips are really stiff. So you may do some simple mobility-based work. And that could be maybe some static stretching if it's really your range of motion is that poor, or some dynamic drills, or even just some ankle range of motion, some hip range of motion, these types of things. And then finally, we move into the P, where we're going through what's called potentiation. Now, potentiation is where we're trying to prime some of the muscle groups and prime the movement pattern, where we're trying to ramp up our intensity and excitation. So what does this look like? Something like a squat. We might go under a squat, just the bar. So we're squatting just the bar, getting ready. We may move up to something like 25% of our working weight, then move up to something like 50% of our working weight, and then maybe do one rep at 100% of our working weight. So we're slowly building ourselves up. Now, putting it all together, what does a ramp warm-up look like? That might be maybe 5 or 10 minutes on a treadmill, just doing some light walking to raise our heart rate and our core temperature. We might then do some activation drills for our glutes. For example, we're putting that booty band around the knee, is doing some crab work, hip raises, those things. Maybe you're doing a quick Pavlov press where you're kind of getting ourselves ready to brace. Then you move into the mobilization work where you're trying to mobilize your ankles, mobilize your hips. Then you move into a squat. You squat with the barbell. You squat with 25% of your working weight, maybe for 5 or 10 reps. You squat with 50% of your working weight, 5 or 10 reps. Then you might do just 1 or 2 reps at 100% of your working weight. Then you move into your actual workout itself. So that whole process might take you that 15 minutes or so. But if we are spending that time to ramp up our session, we're ready to go and we're not wasting our time doing a whole plethora of other things. Now, when it does come to warm-ups, we do want to put in some time and effort through that process. If we kind of jump into something, those first couple of sets of training may be part of your ramp protocol. So you might be thinking, oh yeah, I'm going to squat 50 kilos today. That's my max effort. But really, if you spend some time warming yourself up, that first set, you might be able to squat 70 or 80 kilos. And that might be your max effort because you've actually spent some time getting your body ready to train, because we're trying to train at our peak effort.
Mm. So yeah, warm-ups are nearly training in themselves in a way. It's just part of what the protocol that you need to do to get to the bit that you need to do later.
It is. It is. And I think once you go through that discipline of a good warm-up, then you're ready to party. And, you know, maybe today with my squat session where I was saying before how it didn't feel quite right, it felt a little bit heavier. Heck, maybe I didn't spend enough time doing a dedicated warm-up session, where in the past, maybe I spent a bit more time maybe activating my glutes a bit, or maybe I spent a little bit more time mobilizing my ankles. And then this time I kind of like rushed into it because I was like, all right, let's just get into these squats. Let's party. So maybe that's the reason why. I don't know. But if you were to standardize your entire process, okay, you know that every box has been ticked along the way.
Yeah, definitely. Fantastic advice. I really like it. I hope people take it on board.
Look, Nick, let's answer some questions that have come up on our Facebook group or our forums or anything in between. So the first one actually goes to you. So a question comes up about RPM or spin bikes and if they are helpful for weight loss. What advice would you give that person?
I love this question. Well, look, the fact is I have built my entire business on enjoying bikes, okay? And not once in any of the advertising that I've ever used have I said that it's going to help with weight loss. So that shows you, like, I will put money, you know, I will get no money rather than say that it does, simply because, firstly, okay, so just say you have never done anything in your life and you step into the gym and you hop on one of those bikes and you do a class and then you go home and you do nothing else. So you don't eat anything extra. You just stay with what you're doing. Possibly you might see a shift simply because it's something different to what you've done before. You know, so if you're walking in brand new, and the problem is there though, I'll tell you what, they make you super, super hungry. So if you do them for the first time, you then think always that you have, because they're so hard, you think that you've burnt more calories than what you probably have. So you feel like you can eat 10 jars of peanut butter and you want to when you first start doing this. So that's just a little disclaimer, let me just say that it doesn't directly help with weight loss. What helps with weight loss, as we know, is eating less calories than you expend. Now, it can help if you expend those calories, but you don't necessarily eat them back. There is one problem, though, and the problem is, I believe, and this is someone who's made a living out of it, I believe it just makes you bloody tired. And so, therefore, you can't carry out the exercises and the training that may actually be beneficial for muscle gain, other things that will ultimately give you better body composition, because even if you do it and you don't think you're tired, you will be under recovered and you won't be able to perform as well as what you would. So it's like a long way round to actually getting the results that you want. It doesn't mean that you can't do it. It just means that you have to really look at your goal. So if your goal is the best body composition that you could ever have, I certainly wouldn't be doing, you know, 10 spin classes a week. So that's the truth. That's from the horse's mouth, the mouth of the horse of spin. The gangster, I'm telling you. So it's, they, do you know what? On the other side, they are fantastic for mood building. They're fantastic for going in and feeling a sense of community, for listening to some songs, for getting you out there. If you're doing nothing and you go and do one of those, fantastic. If you've got a ritual to do it once a week with friends, never stop doing that sort of a thing. Just don't think that it is going to directly contribute all the time to you losing quote unquote weight. But also the other thing is, what is weight? Because you might not lose a kilo, but you might completely recompose your body. But yeah, spin isn't the way to body recomposition. The only thing I will say is bikes that have measurable outcomes on them, so quantifiable data and things, you can actually progress with. So now they're starting to come into gyms where you can possibly progress your training a little bit. So if you're able to go in there and progress and maybe make it a little bit more difficult every time in some way or another, you may progress in that way. So that's a nice thing to think of. And I would hate to think that anyone's wasting their time not progressing at all whatsoever. But if you're also, if you're training for a triathlon or something that involves cycling, then go for it, go ham. But we're talking about actual body composition, body recomposition. And for me, I've got to say 10 years of it. And there were times with 16 to 20 classes a week where I looked damn worse than what I do now.
I like it. Good answer.
Thanks. I'm very passionate. But it's not that I don't like it, and one day I might teach another class again. I do like it, but I just think it has its place, and it certainly doesn't need to be held up as anything to do with weight loss. If anything, it's probably mental health. It's great for that.
Now, the next question comes up about our supplements and about Max versus Maxine products. And I guess this question comes up a lot, so much so that I think it's the very top answer in our FAQs on our challenge website. And the question would be, you know, guys, are we allowed to take Maxine products? And girls, are we allowed to take Max's products? And it's a really short answer. And the answer is yes. There's no drastic, amazing, supernatural difference between the two products. They're made from the very similar ingredients with slightly different ratios. So there are some slight different calories between the two products, where the Maxine products have slightly lower calories than the Max's products. But at the end of it, you know, they're totally same or similar between the two. Now, there are some minor differences between each individual product. So I think this question actually came up was, when should I take the Maxine Burn versus the Max's 100% Whey? Now, to answer that question, we just need to understand the difference between those two products. Take away the Max or Maxine, we're talking about Burn protein versus 100% Whey. Now, our Maxine Burn and the Max's Shred system is made up of a blend. So it's a whey protein blend with blends of whey protein concentrate, isolate, and some casein in there, as well as some peptides, plus or minus some BCAAs and other bits and pieces that go into that blend. Now, the whey protein isolate, which is the 100% whey, that's simply a more filtered version of that whey protein concentrate. When we filter whey, it makes the process easier to digest. So if you were to have something like the Max's shred system or the Maxine's burn, because it's a blend, it might take a little bit longer for your body to digest those proteins. If you are sensitive to lactose, there's a slightly higher concentrate of lactose in those products versus something like the 100% whey, which is a little bit more filtered. That means that you can probably digest a little bit quicker than that product, which means it just enters the bloodstream a little bit quicker. It doesn't have all those fancy bells and whistles, so you're missing out on a few other little bits and pieces, but it can be helpful for someone who is a little bit sensitive to things like lactose, like myself. So for me, I choose to have the 100% whey because I don't need a lot of these bells and whistles. I have them from straight sources, and I actually struggle to digest a little bit of the whey protein concentrate. So that's fine. I choose to have the 100% whey. Then another similar type of product would be something like our casein protein. So casein would be a different type of whey, which is filtered through a different process, and that takes a little bit longer to digest through our digestive system. So that's really great to have in the evening so that we can digest it through the night. And that can be found in things like our Maxine's Nighttime, our Max's Anabolic Night, or even our new Maxine's Burn Custard. So they're primarily casein protein, so it takes a little bit longer to digest, so which is perfect for a slow, sustained release of protein.
Yeah, and with a good nighttime snack as well, then.
It is. And it can be really helpful for those who are maybe like the fridge pickers or someone who needs to have something sweet in the evening. Great options to have there. So in the final answer, the super summary of it all, no, there's no difference between the two brands. Yes, there are some differences on the actual label, but guys, we can have the Maxine's range. They taste really cool. I have lots of burn bars and such. I think they're really sweet products. And then girls, we can also have all of the Max's range, from everything from Beta Palm to the 100% whey and everything in between. So it's an open door. We can have all those products there.
Yeah, excellent. Well, I'm enjoying all of them at the moment, and I'm living my best life. I'm deadlifting my best, so couldn't say. Love it.
And, you know, maybe like an example would be something like creatine. So in the Max's range, we sell creatine as just creatine monohydrate. So no frills, no flavors, no nothing. But then in the Maxine's range, we have something like the Crea Burn. So that is something like a cola Crea Burn. I believe you take our Crea Burn.
I do. Right? I really like the cola. I had the grape, but I splashed out. Boom, boom, and got the cola, and I really like it. So I probably think that I'm saturated with creatine, but I can't help myself. Like I just really enjoy it. You know, I have it twice a day at the moment. It's really nice. It's quite refreshing as well. And all I can say is that I look like a beast at the moment. So I can't absolutely correlate the two, but I'm not going to stop now. I'm a little bit addicted to it. But to be honest, for me, I actually quite like the idea of having a cola drink rather than just the white powder. So I know that you put your white powder in your shake, whereas I'm happy to have it as a separate thing. It's just something for me. It helps me to keep my hydration up. And it feels like a little bit of a treat.
Does, yeah. Me.
It's just something exciting, and particularly cola. And I know Di also likes the cola, who we work with. She likes cola. We just seem to like cola. It's like, because cola is just something good to have when you're not really meant to have it, but then you can. So, you know, I like it.
How good. Yeah. So look, I think that's just, you just highlighted two different ways to like consume the product. So for me, I choose not to have some of those cool bells and whistles, such as like a cola flavoring. I would just add it into like my protein shake, and I'd have that, you know, after I train. Yeah. I'm a little bit more basic. Yeah.
I know, but I get you. I know. And, I've done that for a long time too with creatine, but I like this product, and I like that it's easy to mix as well. So it's not something that I have to worry about it actually not mixing up nicely as well.
Look, Nick, the last question here, which I think will be a fun one to answer, right? So a fun question to answer. And this question was, should I chase the burn while training? Should I chase the burn while training? Well, look, Nick, do you want to start? What kind of comments would you make to someone if they ask you this question?
Okay, so it's going to depend on what type of training you are doing. So, you know, there's some types of training in the gym where honestly,
you'll probably feel like a full body burn so much that you have to lie down. That's like a one rep max deadlift. You won't even know where the burn's coming from. But in this particular question, I'm assuming it's in muscle, like isolated muscles. So say, for example, you are doing a glute class at a gym. Like you are just doing a glute focus specific like class that's called booty burn, you know, and just say that you are doing an exercise and you simply can't feel anything. You might feel a little bit in your hips, you might feel it in your lower back, but you can't feel that glute. That is where I would actually encourage you to keep moving positions until eventually you do feel something going on in that area, because that's a good indication that it's actually being used and the area that we need is getting some feedback. So if you want to call it a burn, you can, but it's that muscle. And often if you don't feel it very easily, it's probably something that you haven't used a lot. So the burn might come fairly quickly as well. So if I'm training people in a gym, like a class when I used to do that sort of stuff, I would say, you know, make sure, say with a pulse, with a glute, you know, like a kickback or something, make sure that you can feel it in the glute. So I like it for biofeedback, for feedback in your muscles, that sort of thing. That's something that I would be looking at. But say just say in a class where it's all about, you know, rushing the movements, maybe like a high intensity type class, that's hard to sort of quantify what that means. You know, I'm not too sure whether necessarily feeling the burn in that muscle is going to necessarily make it grow or do anything like that. So it depends what you're chasing. That's my answer.
I like that answer. I do think that first we kind of need to define what is the burn, right? And I guess we've all kind of experienced the burn, let that be in our glutes, let that be in our biceps. We all love a good bicep pump. Let that be maybe in our back if we're lucky, in our calves if we're lucky. Like we've all felt this burning sensation. And what is it? Well, if we talk about physiology, what's actually happening is that there's some metabolites being built up, some genuine waste product being built up in that muscle. And it's a process where things like lactic acid is coming in and trying to clear away some of the hydrogen ions, right? So it's basically this burning sensation because of the acidity change in that muscle. Now, the next part is exactly what you said. Well, what's the point of the training? So if we're trying to increase our strength, well, the burn doesn't have any effect on our strength. If we're trying to increase or improve our body composition, the burn isn't doing anything fancy. Heck, even if we're trying to increase muscle through hypertrophy, the burn, which could be classified under something like cellular swelling, is actually one of our mechanisms of hypertrophy, but it's probably one of the weaker elements of hypertrophy and one of three. So we remember that within hypertrophy, three types of mechanisms of hypertrophy, one being tension. So when we add tension to a muscle, we kind of go through this process of mechanotransduction, where we're starting to stimulate these muscles to grow. We can either go through a process of actual damage to the muscle, and part of that healing process, we actually build that muscle bigger. And then that third idea is this idea of cellular swelling. So yes, we can see some hypertrophy through like metabolic buildup or cellular swelling. That could be things like the pump, but it's really difficult to quantify. So how are we measuring this burning sensation? And then in the next session that you do, how do you know that you are then progressing that burning sensation? So for example, you could measure the burn on a scale of 1 to 10. So, you know, you're pumping with your kickbacks, you've got your bicep curls, you're going for gold, and that burning sensation might be a 5 out of 10, a 6 out of 10, right? But then the more that we kind of like pump out those reps, that burning sensation will kind of increase closer to a 7, 8, 9, 10 out of 10 burn. You could measure it as that number, or you could try to measure it as the time experienced under each number. So you might be cruising at that 5 out of 10, but you've done it for 30 seconds now. Like, oh, Jesus, feeling that burning sensation for 30 seconds. So then what are we going to start to measure this 5 out of 10 for 30 seconds? But then what happens next time if you're cruising at 4 out of 10 for 40 seconds? So it's difficult to measure, difficult to progress. So for hypertrophy, we mainly want to target mechanical tension. That's probably the big driver of hypertrophy. If we focus too much on muscle damage, that's going to negatively impact our next training session. We can't rely on constant damaging of our muscles, because we're not going to be able to perform next time. And we can't rely purely on cellular swelling. I do think what you said is that it can play a role, where if you're doing an exercise and you don't feel that biofeedback, that burning sensation, you may not be able to confidently say that you trained that muscle. So let that be in a glute-based exercise. If you're doing something, let's say like a hip thrust, you're going for that 10 to 15 reps, you get to rep 8 and it's just starting to burn in the glutes, great. Keep going and you're getting up to like that 14, 15 reps, you're feeling that burning sensation in the glutes. Okay, you can confidently say, yes, I hit the glutes. But if you're feeling that burning sensation in the lower back or maybe the hamstrings or some other part of your body, maybe your shoulders for some weird reason, okay, you can start to get that feedback going, well, why are my shoulders so sore doing a hip thrust? Why are my muscles co-contracting so much that I'm creating metabolic waste in my shoulders while I'm doing a hip raise? And maybe you can find answers to that question.
Another one is that I see often is a hamstring curl, where people say that they feel it in their calves. So it's good. It's good to just have it as a cue. Like, you've at least got to feel that muscle. And if it's a burn for you, then that's great, because at least we know that it's the right area, because we don't want to just be training calves on a hamstring curl.
No. But look, I think talking about the pump, you know, Arnold's favorite thing, the pump, I think that plays a relatively important part of our hypertrophy process. You know, we all love to feel the pump, and if it comes, great. If it doesn't, okay. But it shouldn't be something that we necessarily chase. I don't think that we should be, let's say, reducing the weight. So let's say a bicep curl. You could bicep curl 20 kilos for 10 reps. I don't think it's wise to drop that weight down to, let's say, 10 kilos and try to rep out 50 bicep curls because you're trying to chase the pump or chase the burning sensation. I think that's majorly wasting our time in the gym, where we could be spending more time adding more tension to our biceps. So our bicep grows as a byproduct. By adding tension to the muscle, we will experience that pumping sensation. We may not experience that prolonged burn that we might be chasing, especially in some group fitness classes where it's like, chase the burn. I think that can be a little bit misleading, not something that we should necessarily be chasing. If it happens, great, but it shouldn't dictate our training process.
No, it's kind of something that you should have as a tool. You should be able to use it. You should know how to switch it on and get your pump happening, but you certainly don't need to use it every time, as you said. So it's good to know how, but you don't have to use it all the time.
Now, in saying all of that, I do think that metabolic training can have its place within our overall all-encompassing athletic performance. And the best example of metabolic training or metabolic conditioning, or Metcons, is the sport of CrossFit, where they are training their body in all different aspects to perform metabolically. So they're in a different energy system where they're trying to train in this like kind of glycolytic area, where they are trying to perform at a peak level at a different energy percentage. Okay. So what this means is that we need to train our body to get rid of metabolic waste. So if you are a brand new trainee entering the gym, you're going to experience some DOMS simply because our body's not that good at getting rid of some of that metabolic waste. You're going to be sore the next day because our body isn't good at getting rid of metabolic waste. Part of our metabolic training happens through just normal training. So someone like you and I, Nick, we've been training for a long time. Our lymphatic systems, our metabolic waste systems are really good at clearing inflammation in our body, whereas others may not be. So in some of our programs, we actually program some metabolic training for overall athletic performance, so that when we go back to some of these bigger lifts, we have a higher capacity. And we could see that in some of our lean and ripped and tone and shape programs, where we include something like a circuit. So something like a circuit or a Metcon is where we've got like a time-based thing where we're going maybe for 2 minutes, and we're doing a variety of exercises in that 2 minutes, and we're trying to fatigue our muscle where we might be going through that burning sensation. We're trying to mentally push through that burning motion so that we are metabolically training our bodies to get better at clearing some of this inflammation. And what I do find is when someone comes to me in the clinic and they are described as someone who's like an advanced trainee, like you and I, they might hurt their knee, their ankle, their back, in whatever situation they, you know, roll their ankle, they fall down the stairs, whatever. But someone who has a higher metabolic conditioning level often faces lower levels of inflammation. So they can heal quicker, which is why it's one of the biggest benefits of training or doing exercise is we get better at dealing with those metabolic waste products so that we don't experience that inflammation sensation. Well, not as long as other individuals. So to answer the question going full circle, should you chase the pump? The short answer is no. Should we completely disregard it? The short answer is no. Again, that it can have its place and that most of us are getting some sort of metabolic conditioning where we are experiencing that burn sensation. For some, it may be beneficial to train at small amounts, maybe as a finisher, maybe to experience the pump because it feels nice, but we shouldn't change all of our program to purely chase the burn.
No, but yeah, definitely when you're doing my lives and we have to do our pulse squats, there's a reason for it. And Steve just explained it. So yeah, that's good metcon.
The biggest one with that pump or that burn sensation is just that biofeedback. You know, like if you are doing, let's say, a bicep curl just to change the body part and you're curling away, but your forearms give up first or your shoulders give up first before you feel that bicep pump, that's amazing feedback to know that, hey, you aren't doing bicep curls. You're doing like shoulder raises or like wrist curls. You're not doing bicep curls anymore. So maybe you want to do a couple of sets to increase your, you know, mind muscle connection in that muscle so that you get better at that technique so that you can feel it in the bicep again. And maybe that means that you lighten the load to increase the reps, that you practice the technique. Okay, maybe that has its place. But for the majority of us, I think there's we could put our energy towards something else to get a better outcome.
Yes, I agree.
Well, look, Nick, let's wrap it up there. Thank you for tuning in to episode number 25 of the Challenge Weekly Show. If you enjoyed this episode, let us know. You can reach out to us on Facebook, on Instagram, or on places like the forum. Or you can share this with a friend, share it in your story on Instagram. And we hope to catch you next week for episode number 26.
Thanks, guys. See you.